House, this meeting of the House Special Ed Committee on Education will come to order. It is now 3:16. It is Thursday, March 10th, 2011. It's day 52, and we are in the Ramona Barnes Committee Room in the Alaska Capitol, which is room 124. Present today are Representative Tuck, Representative Lynn, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Representative Foster, and myself, Representative Pruitt. Let the record show that Representative Peterson is actually in another committee that is wrapping up, and I believe he is testifying, so he will be excused. He's testifying in another committee. He'll be excused, and Representative Volson also is excused. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. I'd ask anyone that has your cell phones to make sure that they're on vibrate or off so that they don't disrupt. Or again, you always donuts. Today we will have a presentation by Innova Labs, and they're going to be speaking about remote autonomous hydrogen production systems. Stations. I even said that wrong. My understanding is we were supposed to actually have a presentation of one of the generators, but unfortunately, they were not able to make it. The generator was not able to make it here. Is that?
That is correct. I got lost in transit.
Okay. Well, lost. That's not a good thing.
You found it last night.
Hope it's not a prototype and the only one. well, we sure appreciate you putting the effort into it. Maybe at another point in time you might be able to get a demonstration from you. So with that being said, though, Carrie Hilton, president of Innova Labs, Martin Adams of National Capital. Gentlemen, if you would both say your names for the record as well as your affiliation and start your testimony, I'd appreciate that.
My name is Marvin Adams, president of National Capital and Anchorage, Alaska, a lifelong Alaskan, originally from Yakutat.
I'm Gary Hilton, president and CEO of Innova Labs. Our company is headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas.
And if, as you present, if you move back and forth at any point in time, please make sure that you again re-identify yourself to help the recorder. Okay. Looks like we do have everything on screen if you would like to proceed.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman Neil Foster and Chairman Lance Pruitt. Thank you for having us today. My name is Marvin Adams. I'm president of National Capital. I'm a Clinkan Indian, the Raven Moati, Kushkaquan clan leader of the Owl at Yakutat. I'm a lifelong Alaskan born in Juneau, Alaska, and currently president of the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp 87 in Anchorage, which is currently hosting a Meet the Candidates Forum in Anchorage Assembly this month. So, also, my bona fides are that I was a regional credit officer for the and a financial analyst for the Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs from 1997 through 2004. Our office booked over $120 million in loans in 5 years, and some of our notable projects included the Diamond Center Hotel, the Points of Savaya project here in Southeast, the Grand Denali Hotels up in the Mount Denali, the Spring Hill Suites in Fairbanks, and other commercial vessels and others, including the Ketchikan Indian Health Corporation's clinics. I was also vice president of Native American Bank. We established a bank up in Anchorage, Alaska, and I was a loan officer in our loan production office. Also, in my rural experiences, I served 1 year as president and CEO of the Yakutat Kwan Corporation and was elected 3 terms as a director. I'm just kind of giving you my bona fides to let you know that I'm well-rounded, real familiar with Alaska. I also served on the Yakutat Board, Power Board, on the electrical utility, and served on alternative energy projects from abandoned oil wells, drillable oils in the 1950s. We looked at kinetic energies from tidal work, also working in collaboration on the feasibility with BIA and the roads program, trying to put a bridge system that would harness this energy. But to demonstrate my personal effort in addressing the high cost of energy in rural Alaska, I feel the hurt and the anguish our people feel out there when they have to decide on which is most important to them, either heating the home, buying groceries to feed the children, or buying coats and gloves or buying gas for the four-wheelers to go out and fish. This really touches me. I understand what they're going through, and it's important to me. So, ladies and gentlemen of the Energy Committee, today we have hope. We have found an alternative fuel source that is economical to produce and is readily available. It's called hydrogen. And in my business travels last month, I met a business acquaintance when I was in Chicago, and he introduced me to Nova Labs. Nova Labs did not have their radar on Alaska. They never even occurred to them that the energy crisis facing rural Alaskans and Alaska as a whole. And I had contacted Mr. Corey Hilton and had asked him to come to Alaska and see if their technologies would be able to provide immediate relief to the high costs of fuel in rural Alaska. I've spent hours since then studying hydrogen technology and researched white paper of the studies done in hydrogen in Alaska. And today, the one that stands out was completed by Mr. Steve Gilbert of Chugach Electric Corporation and Steve Colt of UAA ISR program, funded by the Denali Commission and the Department of Energy report that was done in February of 2006. I've since discussed this study with both Steve Colt and Steve Gilbert, and both have indicated a strong interest in seeing this breakthrough in hydrogen storage. In fact, Steve Colt says that if you really wanted to make a splash, he says, demonstrate a four-wheeler running on pure hydrogen. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, here is Mr. Corey Hilton, president of Innovative Labs.
Thank you. Yes, we have been working in the hydrogen field at Innova Labs for a little over 5 years. We've been working aggressively for past year and a half on various levels of military projects, mostly some commercial, but mostly military projects with various departments within the military. And that is what's kind of accelerated our development and kind of brought to the forefront some of the technologies that we bring here today. They obviously are looking for some of the similar things that Alaska needs, which is, you know, a fuel source that is easy to produce autonomously, whether that be in a desert or whether that be, you know, out in a village or in the snow. Being able to store that safely, being able to use that portably. So portable hydrogen storage, the creation of it, et cetera, is all part of Innova's vision and is something that we've been working on for a long time.
Excuse me, let the record reflect that Representative Peterson is here. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. So, you know, to speak to what makes Innova different from other, you know, hydrogen companies, number one is we've got a very efficient way to produce it. Typically, when people are producing or companies are producing hydrogen with, you know, wind or solar or whatever they're producing it with, they're having to end up storing it at a 5,000 to 10,000 PSI storage capacity. These are large, thick-walled, very, very heavy tanks, high pressure, very dangerous, and they're certainly not portable. And as part of that production, what typically makes it inefficient is the fact that you have to compress that hydrogen into the tanks at that high capacity and that high pressure, and the compression phase alone, those compressors use more electricity to compress the hydrogen for storage than it did to produce the hydrogen in the first place. So, again, it's not very effective, it's not very portable, and it's not very safe. So not only do we have in a very efficient way to create the hydrogen using, you know, Alaska natural resources, for that matter, natural alternative energies, whether that be wind, solar, geothermal, tidal, whatever, excess grid power even, it doesn't matter. We can store that in these canisters that you see here. This is a small one. These are high capacity, low pressure storage devices, and we can charge these canisters, straight off the electrolyzers directly with no compressors in between at about 200 PSI, and these can operate at 100 PSI or less, and that's with a standard makeup of the composite material that's inside the canisters. It is not zeolite. It is not anything you've typically heard about, other than the fact that you may have heard of metal hydrides. This is a form of a metal hydride, but it's our version of it, and it's a composite nanostructured hydride that will allow us to absorb hydrogen into these canisters at a rate of about 500 to 600 to 1. So, for instance, we've got about 100 liters of hydrogen in this little bottle. We've got about 300 liters in that one, and we've got about 1,000 liters in this one. So, again, they're like little sponges inside there that absorb the hydrogen as we charge it. And hydrogen storage is also a problem due to the fact that it's a very tiny, the tiniest, actually, molecule, and it likes to find a way out. So when you're trying to store hydrogen at high pressure, it makes it very difficult to store it. So storage for long periods of time are not practical. Hydrogen tends to break down the materials that they're being stored in, make them brittle. So it's not reusable. It's not safe. It's not practical.
Representative Sadler has
yes.
a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chemistry is by far my worst subject, so I don't know if anybody else is more hip on this. It would be helpful to me, hydrogen as a fuel, why is it attractive? Why are we speaking of storing hydrogen? Is it something that's burned in place of methane or natural gas? Even some general comments about hydrogen, its character, its pervasivity in the atmosphere. So just in general, it would be helpful to put this all in context for me.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. The hydrogen in general is one of the most abundant elements in the universe. I mean, it's just... It's everywhere. It's trapped in vast amounts in water. So being able to get the hydrogen out of water is fairly simple process. Hydrogen itself, when it burns, it creates water vapor as a byproduct. So there's no carbon footprint. There's no environmental impact whatsoever. It's very safe. It's very clean burning fuel. For the green aspects, not to use a overused term, but it's very earth friendly as a fuel. It's very powerful fuel. I mean, it's much more efficient than a gasoline type fuel, a fossil fuel, if it's used in the proper way. For instance, in heating and cooking, it will boil water three times faster than any other type of fuel. So for boilers and for heating and for things like that, you're going to get a lot more efficiency out of a hydrogen fuel than you would out of anything else. So, again, it's a earth-friendly fuel that we can, basically for the lack of another term, we can extract it out of the water that exists, whether that be fresh water or seawater or whatever. For the most part, fresh water is best, so we don't have to make any custom modifications. But Alaska has a lot of water, sure. Alaska has a lot of wind. Alaska has a lot of things that, quite frankly, until about 3 weeks ago, we never even thought about. And it's a perfect fit, really, for what we're trying to do.
I think I've got a follow-up by two individuals here as well. Representative Sadler.
Mr. Chair, have you ever seen hydrogen burn in nature, or is it being used as a fuel source? How could it be used as a fuel source? Some of your information describes its possible use as injection into an internal combustion, but what you're proposing as a use for space heating, and how could hydrogen be used and burned?
Okay, sure.
That's fine.
It could be used in many ways, and I'll just keep discussing, and then we'll click through the presentation and see what we missed. But it can be used for, again, the heating and the cooking is one thing. It can be used for locomotion. We can convert engines, internal combustion engines, very easily. We have proprietary carburetors and some things that we've developed that make it fairly simple to convert four-wheelers and snowmobiles and outboard motors and any type of locomotion that's out there. Right now we're at the 500 about a half a liter, 500 cc's and less, which pretty much, you know, takes care of, you know, all the small type of vehicles that are out there. Portable power, again, using internal combustion engines, whether we use four strokes or diesels or rotary engines, it doesn't matter. And to speak to that, we're doing a lot of research and development with the engines itself. Can basically take the same canister that you're using for your four-wheeler and use it later that night for heating or cooking or whatever. So it does, it has a broad area of uses. And the, you know, one of the other things that is interesting about the canisters is not only is it portable, but the materials, a lot of the materials that we use to make up our pellets inside there are rare earth elements. And it seems that Alaska has an abundance of rare earth elements. So, you know, the possibility of canister manufacturing and pellet manufacturing and things like that are also things that may be of interest to Alaska. Does that...
It's very helpful. Thank you.
Representative Foster had a follow-up to an early question.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on that point, in terms of just trying to put it in perspective and looking from the top down here, are we replacing fuel like in a four-wheeler, or are we letting a four-wheeler, you still put the gasoline in it, but this enriches the fuel-air mixture and making it more efficient? Which one?
Okay, yes, Mr. Chair. All the instances that we've talked about previously up to now would be complete replacement. We can completely replace any fossil fuel whatsoever, 100%, with the fuel powered from these canisters, okay, with hydrogen. Okay, we've done a lot of research, and there is the possibility of using hydrogen through some of our smaller electrolyzer products, our hydrogen reactors, as well as the canisters themselves to supplement and augment fossil fuels and get great benefit out of that. But what we're talking about here today is complete replacement. So all your small vehicles that the villages are using, that the people are using, could be replaced with canisters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah.
Representative Peterson had one more, and then after Representative Peterson's question, we'll hold off from the rest of the committee and let them go through the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I was late here. I had a bill up in another committee. I actually took a tour of a facility in Algona, Iowa in 2006 that was converting old six-cylinder engines, cutting them in half, making three-cylinder engines out of them, and fitting them onto many little tractors that they were going to be selling to airports to haul the luggage around. And they were going to be running on hydrogen. And I actually saw one of these engines running on hydrogen, and the only exhaust was a few drops of water mm-hmm. coming out the pipe. And the guy even sat a glass under that, and after some water built up in there, he drank it. And so it is a fairly impressive and green and clean type of process. And
right.
So I'm glad to see that innovations are still moving forward with that, because we do have an abundance of, especially in Alaska, of water available to be used in these type of devices. So,
absolutely. To speak to that, up until now, anything that you've heard about a vehicle running off of hydrogen. Hydrogen buses and things like that, they're either taking high-pressure hydrogen and using it in the internal combustion engine, and that's pretty very new technology, or they're using the high-pressure hydrogen into a fuel cell. Again, expensive, very inefficient, heavy. There's just a lot of downsides, and then it's, you know, where do you get the hydrogen? You know, we're taking a holistic approach to the whole solution, and we're taking it on a small scale. But you know, when I say that, I'm talking about being able to produce your own hydrogen and store your own hydrogen and then use your own hydrogen portably at low, safe pressure. And that's just really the whole difference. Is we're not only do we have the hydrogen vehicle at the end that can run on it, we've got a safe solution in the middle, and then we know where we're going to get it. That's the big problem is that people just don't, there's no infrastructure where to get the hydrogen. The high pressure is just not safe. So, we're excited about our developments and what we can do. I'll just kind of click through the presentation a little bit. Some I'll skip over because we've already discussed it. This particular, this is a power generator. This is non-classified information, but it's a power generator that we made. It's a 200cc engine. Basically, it's a 5-kilowatt generator. Weighs about 85 pounds, okay? It's lightweight. It's small. It's very powerful. This particular one is an AC-DC model, producing both high-amp DC and AC power as well, just for the specific specifications. This particular generator can run pretty much all day on that little fuel rack right there, under load, by the way. Again, this was going to be a video. Can't show the video now because I had to put it into PDF to get it in. But that was going to show you it running. But the for the record, also the generator that we shipped up here, they found it last night. It will be here in the morning. I will be leaving in the morning, but the generator will stay behind with Marvin with our canisters, so to save us some shipping and not to get it lost again when I come back in a couple weeks. So in a couple weeks, he can coordinate the people that want to see one of these things pumping out some power. We may be able, I don't know about the time frame, but we convert four-wheelers all the time. We may be able to have a four-wheeler up here or something, and people can run around on it or whatever.
Please coordinate with the committee aides on that, and we'll make sure that the members know about that.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, just kind of the Innova vision and difference, cyclical, holistic approach. It doesn't do much good to have hydrogen storage if you can't use it anywhere or produce it anywhere. So, we're putting together, the whole package. This is an example of a remote charging station. And you can see here that it was originally designed to be able to just to be airdropped in a Connex box and be self-sufficient to go anywhere, that there is a water source. So not anywhere, but a lot of places. And, this particular one is using a 30-kilowatt system, and it's going to be producing about 6,000 liters an hour of hydrogen. So this particular fairly small-scale hydrogen production station can produce a little over 100 of these large canisters a day. Okay, pretty significant. This is all scalable. If we need less hydrogen, we can make them smaller. If we need more hydrogen, we can make them bigger. And you'll see the larger, what we call vessels out there, kind of in the distance. That's our mid-level storage, and basically those are just larger versions of these so that, we can store tens of thousands of liters of hydrogen as this thing is being produced, and then charge these as you want to and as you need them, and having them on the shelf for distribution and, whatever makes sense.
Representative Sadler, I will allow this time.
Thank you. Mr. Hilton, I'm sorry, charging, when you say charging, feel free at any time to explain your terms. Do you mean charging, wind to hydrogen charging, creating, isolating, distilling hydrogen from water? Describe the process briefly. Okay. What do you mean by charging?
Okay. Sure. Yes, you'll drop one of these in or you'll erect one of these. You'll build a production station, and we will tap it into a water source, whether that's a lake or a hose or whatever, any type of water source. And we'll get the water source to the hydrogen generators that are inside the Connex box, and they will use electricity from the wind, solar, or whatever, okay? And then they will basically break that water down into hydrogen and oxygen. Think back, this is just a very sophisticated electrolysis experiment. It's, you know, think back when you're sticking the 9-volt battery and you're sticking the thing in there and you watch the bubbles.
I feel that.
Okay. That is what this is, except it's a lot more technical, a lot more scientific, and, you know, the breakthroughs we've made in technologies is significant. So it's that on steroids. And so we're taking the water, we're making hydrogen out of it. The oxygen can either be, it can stay in the water, it can be vented, it can be used separately. We're not interested in that so much. We're capturing the hydrogen. And when we say charging, is the hydrogen is being produced and it's being stored in a vessel, which is a large container, larger container. And then when we say charge, is the reason we say charging is because these are quick connects, and you connect these up to the system, and the comes from the medium-sized vessel into the small vessel, you know, into the little canister. So it's like charging a battery. You know, that's why we call it that. We're charging this with hydrogen, and then this can sit on the shelf as long as you want until you need it. So this is really a very sophisticated way to store energy. Not only the gaseous fuel, and that's a good point. This is hydrogen gas, not liquid or not anything like that. It's a good way to store the energy that we are creating from the wind or from whatever source we're wanting to use it for.
And I'm going to follow up with that. Is it the water source, and this is relevant to our rural areas, can we use salt water? Does the water content, what's in the water, matter, and how does that affect your systems based on what minerals or what things might be on the water? How long does the longevity of the system deteriorate based on what might be in there?
Okay, there's a couple ways to answer this question. There's a pre-filter system in here before it gets to the hydrogen generators. So no matter what water source is coming in, we're going to make sure that it's what the electrolyzer wants before it gets there. Okay, so it doesn't really matter to a certain degree. And then when think of it as filters. When your refrigerator filter water spigot gets clogged up and it starts, you know, it's hard to get a glass of water, it's time to change it. Same thing here. I mean, we're going to have a very mini treatment facility inside this system that will pre-treat that. So we can desalinate that along the path. We can just simply filter that along the path. And then we can also change the makeup of the electrolyzers themselves, the coatings and the plates and the materials that go into that device to make it work specifically with salt water even. So because we do have applications where, you know, people might be floating in salt water and want to have hydrogen. And we can do that. So
okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And follow up, and then we'll let you get back to the presentation.
Okay. Right,
thank you. So it takes electricity to operate this process. Would you be able to use hydrogen to generate more electricity than what it takes to create the hydrogen?
Possibly, but not right now. I think we can, you know, we might can get there. And I understand what you're saying is like use the hydrogen to power the generator that powers the electrolyzer that powers the hydrogen. That,
exactly.
Yeah, right. And I think that, you know, we can get closer to that, and we can certainly do that. But I don't think that it's something that could be. It's certainly not something that can be, you know, perpetual or self-sustaining or self-fulfilling. It's gonna there's gonna be a, you know, a breakdown somewhere at some point that has to be, you know, taken care of. But I think that we can get closer to that later on. But as much wind and things that we have, we might as well use that and then use the hydrogen from that. But we can get closer to that later on, for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
Again, this is just an inside look of the charge. You know, the production station or the Connex box here. You can see the little, you know, all the electrical panels and the water filtration and the hydrogen generators themselves is basically a little self-contained facility where we would, in the instance of someone that already has a wind generator or wind power. You just hook it up to the outside electrical panel, hook it up to a hose, and start producing hydrogen. This is an example of a very remote system that's totally self-contained. This particular device here, everything is within the Connex box, the wind turbines, the solar panels. Basically drop it in with a helicopter, flip it open, erect the wind turbines, and tap into the water source, and you're already producing hydrogen for, you know, missions or whatever. This was going to be to show you a video of how safe these canisters are, and I'll just explain it to you. We can make these videos available to certain people if need be, but this represents a large canister here, fully charged, being shot with a sniper rifle with an incendiary round in it, which is an explosive round. What happens is it basically the canister is shot, the incendiary round sparks as it's supposed to do. It creates a little tiny flame about the size of a Bic lighter, which goes out in less than a second, and there's a hole left in the canister. Okay, so they don't explode, they don't implode, they're not harmful in any way. I mean, if the beautiful thing about the pellets is they're programmed that if they're exposed to the atmosphere, they just stop working. So you don't have to worry about runaway hydrogen or anything. Again, there's safety features built into the canister, but they wanted this thing tested to make sure that if one of them got shot, that it's not going to hurt anybody, and this was representative of that. Again, we can rack and stack these canisters. You can daisy chain them. You can do lots of things with them. The canisters are DOT approved. The canisters are, we have safety data sheets on them. We can fly them. We can transport them, is a better word, anywhere in the world via air or ground. I mean, we typically ship them FedEx. We FedEx them up here, and we Alaska aired them here. And so, I mean, it's not something that we have to get legislation or anything involved to approve the use of these. We're already selling them. So this is something that's readily available, and we would just simply, ramp up manufacturing or create new manufacturing facilities, for that matter, that would be appropriate, that might make sense for Alaska. Smaller ones, again, we've got, tiny little ones of these that do things for tiny little engines, I guess is a good way of saying it. I was doing some research after it was brought to my attention about the rare earth element potential in Alaska. I think that, for any program to succeed, it needs an end user. And Inova Labs and its relationship with Alaska, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will, because you have an end user. You have people that are going to need the canisters, and you're going to have the pellets inside the canisters that can be not completely, but in a large, to a large degree, the materials that are in them could be provided by Alaska itself, reducing the cost, creating jobs, all those things. We are going to be working on, obviously, we talked about heating and cooking. We'll try to get as much data as we can to, find out what's mostly used. And obviously, you want to start with what's mostly used and work our way the other direction. But take a Toyo stove, and we'll have a hydrogen conversion kit for that, so that people can stop using the oil and start using the hydrogen. And we'll have kits that are available and can be installed. Various vehicles, boats, ATVs, snowmobiles, portable generators. I don't know what a typical household uses in Alaska, but, you know, 2 kilowatts, 5 kilowatts, you know, even 10 kilowatts, 15 kilowatts is a very small package for us, and they run off these canisters. So, again, just, you know, I think after today, a lot of imagination will be, you know, you'll be thinking a lot about what could be done and how it could help Alaska, and, you know, we welcome the opportunity, and we, you know, welcome the questions, and you know, any way that we can help, we want to help.
Okay, very good. I'm sure we have a ton of questions. I'm going to start off with a simple one, which may not be simple. What is the cost of, I would say one unit. I mean, we saw the Connex unit, but obviously there's multiple applications, multiple generators. Can you give us an idea of the, kind of the scope of the cost, and then we'll definitely move to committee.
Again, depending on scale, if we wanted to, build a 6,000 to 9,000 liter an hour production facility, you know, you're looking, and to provide, say, 1,000 four-wheeler kits and 1,000 snowmobile kits and 1,000 boat outboard motor kits and training and all those types of things that would go along with it, which in and of itself creates some opportunities, job opportunities. You're probably looking at somewhere, you know, in the $3.5 million range to do something like that. To do three of them, which we've kind of sketched out a budget, if you will, a rough one, but nonetheless, you know, we could do three using economies of scale and already being over here. We could do three of these, you know, supplying Central and Western, and I don't know my Alaska geography enough yet. I apologize. But three of them nonetheless, you know, for about 7.8.
Okay.
So, again, you know, to get some of these working and trying them out and getting people to start adapting and thinking, because that's, you know, the psychology of this. There's a lot of aspects to it, but it can be a game changer, and it can help a lot of lives.
Okay. Well, I have follow-ups, but I'm going to move to committee members. Representative Lynn.
What kind of military application, Department of Defense? Do you have any contact with those people? Seems like you have a lot of military applications.
Yes, sir. We have very good contacts there. I can't speak to the applications, but we do have various high level. I mean, we're in the OS, we're in Office of Secretary of Defense level of products and testing and things like that. So I can't really speak to anything specific, but yes, we do have very good contacts there.
Follow-up, Representative Lynn.
Are you the sole, are you the only person who builds this stuff? Do you have competitors with essentially the same technology?
No, sir. We, not to use a maybe a inappropriate term, but we're a sole source. We're the only people, the only game in town that has things to this level. I mean, there are hydrogen storage devices that are heavier and store a lot less hydrogen and aren't so practical. There are electrolyzers that can hook up to a wind turbine and produce hydrogen. I mean, people, there's been studies after studies, even with the University of Alaska, of different experiments and trials of things that have been done. Where we're different is we're more efficient, and we have a really ready-to-use practical application. And, you know, I see us working with the universities and doing studies and testing and, you know, all the wonderful things that come out of it. But right now, we're the only one.
The only game in town.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to ask the person that's probably most relevant to Co-Chair Foster to ask.
Thank you. I'm from thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm from Nome out in rural areas, and so I appreciate that. What is the cost, for example, if you're looking at a four-wheeler that goes 50 miles on a gallon of gas, and out in the village maybe it costs $7 for that gallon of gas? How much does it cost to produce hydrogen power that will move that four-wheeler the same distance, the 50 miles? I mean, any kind of numbers do you have?
Well, we'll have more specific numbers when we get some data that we can crunch from Alaska. But in general, think of it like this. Think of a four-wheeler, call it a 400cc four-wheeler, which is a beefy four-wheel drive, all-terrain, you know, independent suspension four-wheeler, Honda, Polaris, whatever. You're going to typically put about, you know, 5.5 gallons of gas in there. You know, it's going to cost you whatever it is today and a lot more tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we can snap three of the larger canisters on the back of that thing and run it just as long or longer as a full tank of gas for, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but let's call it, you know, 35 cents a liter. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, right now we're at, you know, at the $2 GGE, which is a gallon of gasoline equivalent range. And if we tap into existing wind farms or wind power that you're already using, it's going to be pennies. I mean, it's just going to be the fuel itself becomes inconsequential.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard a presentation recently on natural gas and converting engines, combustible engines, to natural gas and how much longer the engines will last. How is it with hydrogen? Will it? How is it on the engine? Does it break down the engine quicker? Does it make it last longer? Is it a cleaner burn? Is it lubricate? How does it work with the combustible conversions?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuck, the hydrogen, it's similar. We worked with a lot of natural gas conversion companies doing experiments and things like that. But hydrogen, it certainly burns cleaner. You can't have anything burn any cleaner than hydrogen. There's just nothing out there that competes with producing water as a byproduct. Now, in that particular instance where he was drinking it, he probably was drinking a little tiny bit of oil maybe from that piston, so that was a little risky. But the byproduct is water vapor. So there's nothing cleaner. The effects on the engine, it's going to make the engine last longer. The reason it makes the engine last longer is because the engine burns cooler. Even though hydrogen is a more combustible gas, it burns instantly. So where gasoline doesn't, gasoline vapor, diesel, any of that, you're working under compression. You're working under a different, storage, air to fuel ratio mixtures and things like that. They're going to burn hot. Hydrogen burns cool, so the engine's going to run a lot longer. Also, because there's no carbon buildup, you're going to go longer in between oil changes. You're going to go longer between spark plugs. I mean, if you look at the long-term effects, just the cost of maintenance and service alone that can be, you know, enormous, can be reduced. So your engines are going to last longer, and it's going to be definitely much, much more appealing to the environment and more efficient. I mean, we can take a typical combustion engine, just to give a little high level on that, is going to be approximately, take a four-stroke gasoline engine, it's going to be approximately 26% efficient. You're losing a lot of mechanical energy. You're exploding the gas before top dead center, and the piston has to push its way all the way around. Heavy engine, heavy cranks, all that. With hydrogen, you can ignite the engine exactly at top dead center or even slightly after, and it burns instantly, completely. There's no byproduct. There's no emission. We're getting, you know, in the 60s with the minor conversions and up to 120% efficiencies burning on hydrogen with the same engine, just making modifications. So, you know, we're basically making that engine, instead of trying to tear itself apart, we're letting it work smoothly like it's designed to work, and it's going to be a lot more efficient.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hilton, if I understand what you're describing correctly, it sounds like you've discovered the modern philosopher's stone. You know, they want to turn base metal into gold. You found a way to turn water into gasoline. Given this, if I'm understanding correctly, how is it you're going to this kind of use, you know, four-wheelers, chainsaws, I don't know, what kind of stuff, as opposed to mega-sized power generation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sadler, the reason is, it's just it for one, it's the reason we're not there to the large scale engines yet is just it's just budget funding. I mean, we're a no debt, you know, small company, but nonetheless, you know, we don't have that type of access and that type of resource right now. But you know, it is it sounds amazing and everything, but the key is that there's really nothing remarkable about the way we're creating the hydrogen to some degree. I mean, some of it is remarkable, but for the most part, we can get the hydrogen produced. I mean, we can team with people. We're not wind people. We're not solar people. So, you know, we're hydrogen people. So a lot of teaming and partnering opportunities are out there. But, you know, producing it is one thing, but the key is storing it. And storing it safely and efficiently, and storing enough of it that it makes sense to use, is the key.
That helps. I think. And actually, to expand that briefly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you store it as a solid. I understand from your diagrams, you store it as basically a hydrogen impregnated metallic alloy. It's stored in a solid state. It's not a high pressure. It's not stored as gas per se. Exactly.
That is correct. It's stored molecularly into the material that's in the canister.
Okay.
Basically, the hydrogen is bonding to those materials, you know, at a very, very high capacity.
If you can give me some idea of scale, too, this is my last question of this, a BTU equivalent, you mentioned gasoline equivalent. Is there a volume equivalent to BTUs? And methane, natural gas, is my frame of reference.
There is, but we would have to pick. There's so many different ways to look at that formula. You know, hydrogen is one of the most, you know, one of the most combustible, you know, materials out there. And again, it burns at about, you know, 5,000 times faster. It ignites 5,000 times faster than gasoline. But to do a kilojoules or a BTU or any type of math. It would be hard to do that right now. I mean, we can offer, you know, some comparisons and some data and stuff later on, but you know, the beautiful thing about the hydrogen, it is going to burn and work a lot more efficiently than any air gas fossil fuel mixture, you know, out there, if the engine is designed properly or the furnace is designed properly or whatever to utilize it.
Fascinating. Thank you,
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know what the approximate cost of converting a four-wheeler or a snow machine would be so that it could run on hydrogen?
Yes, Representative Peterson. We're hoping to get the cost. You know, obviously, the more we do this, the cheaper the cost is going to be, just like anything else. But we think, based on the numbers that we've run for our first concept, our first pilot project, we can get that cost down somewhere around $400 per kit.
And follow up, Representative Peterson.
And since you can produce this and store it in what, little cubes, or I'm not sure exactly what you call it, pellets, you could potentially produce these in Alaska, and it would be a value-added product that you could ship to other parts of the country or other parts of the world. Is that? That's the type of potential you're talking about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that would be correct. I mean, we can. It is stored in the little pellets, and the some of the materials that are used in the little pellets could be mined here in Alaska. So, you know, Alaska could be a manufacturing facility not only for the canisters but also for the pellets. There's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of tentacles to project like this, a lot of benefits.
So there's some serious business opportunities for areas with wind in Alaska here.
Right. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few quick questions here. Hydrogen, that's the same fuel that the space shuttle uses. Is that, that's correct? And you had mentioned it's very combustible. Could you, again, go back to you shoot it with an incendiary round and it doesn't blow up? How does that work?
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Yes, typically, I mean, you know, there are people, you know, they hear hydrogen, they think Hindenburg, they think scary things, and you know, the fabric on the Hindenburg was is the main problem there. It wasn't, you know, hydrogen was a nice catalyst to have alongside it, but nonetheless, the reason or the fact that these are stored, you know, in a different state in the pellet, it's not hydrogen yet, okay, until it's exposed. It was and it is, but I'm just trying to speak real high level. It's not hydrogen again until we want to use it. So when you shoot it with the incendiary round, there's about 3% of the canister of volume of hydrogen that has been released inside the air, the negative air spaces within that canister and within those little pellets, okay? There's about 3% that sits in there. Mm-hmm. And hydrogen wants to get out, and it wants to get into the atmosphere. And when it hits the atmosphere, it dissipates instantly. It's another beautiful thing. So if there is a leak, it just absorbs into the atmosphere instantly. But when you shoot it with an incendiary round, the reason there's a small little flame there, like a Bic lighter, is because it's burning off that 3%. It's also, at that same exact instant, been exposed to the atmosphere. So it's not in the canister mm-hmm. anymore. So it doesn't work.
Follow-up, Representative Foster.
Thank you. You had mentioned in regards to the cost, it could be just pennies. If you have, for example, it's hooked up to a wind farm, and then you had mentioned on a 6,000 to 9,000 liter per hour setup, maybe about $3.5 million for something like that. At that rate, what kind of power would you need? Like, for example, do you need a 100 kilowatt, you know, wind turbine? I assume that you probably couldn't use like the wind turbine that you'd put behind your house. You need something bigger, but maybe not a megawatt. Or do you need something that? Okay. Do you have any idea how much power you'd need for a setup that size?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The you know, in the 9,000 liters range, you know, 50-60 kilowatts. You know, or, you know, 45 to 30 kilowatts for the smaller one, and, you know, up or down from there, not a lot. I mean, as you saw from our, you know, transformer example there that opens up, I mean, it provides its own wind turbines, and those are vertical axis turbines, but those are 10 kilowatts apiece. So, you know, those are bigger than you would use for a home, for instance, to just aid with your power. But it doesn't require a lot. It's not going to require, you know, we could tap into the existing power and be basically, you know, have no effect on it whatsoever. Right. Very small power requirement.
Perfect. And just one short one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last one I have here is the, in terms of, I think Representative Sadler was hitting on this, in terms of maybe the loss of power. If I'm on my four-wheeler and I'm, you know, getting stuck in the bogs there, in terms of loss of power, is there much or maybe it's more power? Can you give us an idea? And
sure. Mr. Chairman, what you refer to there is torque, mm-hmm. usually, and it depends on how much effort goes into the engine conversion, but typically, you know, when you burn hydrogen, you're going to have more torque. You know, you're going to have, you know, more power. If you design the engine, you know, to burn these, you know, in the, you know, 120% efficiency range, you're going to have much more than you did before. Very, very few chances of any type of conversion giving you less.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Tuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, pretty impressive technique and product. I know that, you know, we have a wind diesel research center up in Fairbanks trying to figure out how we can, because we have so much diesel in Alaska, so many communities depend on it, how we're going to get wind and get wind to supply more than, you know, than 10 to 14%, which is the maximum we can do, and how to store wind. Actually, this is the solution for that storage of wind. And also with the high cost of barging in fuel diesel and the even higher cost of having to transport it through airplanes. It sounds like this is safe for air travel. If you need to freight it in with air freight, wouldn't be too much of a problem. So it sounds like it's sounds like a pretty good solution. And I like the vision of being able to go out in my four-wheeler, pop one of those canisters off, put on my little burner stove, and heat up my food and move on. You know, so yeah, no, that's really impressive. And so, how do we buy stock?
Again, very portable. You could drive your four-wheeler out to your campsite and cook your food with it, and after you're done with that, you could, you know, be nice and warm and cozy in your tent. So it's very, very versatile, and it is something that we hope can impact people and impact communities. That was the main focus behind the company in the first place, was to make a difference, not really to, you know, we ended up here, but the main thing that started us was to try to make a difference. So hopefully we can help, you know, the people of Alaska in some way, and we're here to do that.
I have a question. I'm going to go back to the kind of what you were, what you need to produce it. How much water do you need to produce? And of course, we've been talking about the 6,000 to 9,000 liters, liter units. How much water would you typically need for that? And yeah, go ahead. I'll let you answer that.
Yes, we could. I mean, you're typically going to get about a 1,000 liters of hydrogen out of a gallon of water, but you still end up with some water. Okay, it's just that the hydrogen piece of it. So, for instance, this, we can take a gallon of water and convert it to fill up this particular canister. And I'm just speaking very high level, very general mathematics at this point. But in general, 1,000 liters of hydrogen in a liter of water. So it's 1,000 to 1.
Okay.
Just to give you some general ballparks of mass. So if we're producing 9,000 liters an hour, we're going to need 9 liters of water to do it.
Okay.
Not much.
Yeah, not much.
No, which container was it? The big one?
The large one.
Okay,
thank you. So if we had half of a Coke bottle of water.
Right.
We could process it and fill that up.
Okay. Representative Sattler.
Thank you. And we're actually zooming in on one of my questions earlier, just getting some ideas of scale. So if a very roughly, very high level, if a gallon of water gets you 1,000 liters of hydrogen, how much energy value is there in 1,000 liters of hydrogen? And putting gallons of gas or BTUs or something that I can grok, understand?
Again, it just depends on how you're going to be using it. We haven't really been thinking about it in BTUs for heating and things like that until, to be honest, a few days ago. And we will be, we'll have engineers and scientists and stuff crunching some of this data that we'll be able to take back with us. To give you some sort of equivalent right now, I can't. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, that 1,000 liters of hydrogen has a lot of energy value. Because you can heat your home for, a day or two or longer with a canister.
Wow.
That's pretty, pretty big.
Okay. Representative Lynn.
Thank you. How long has your company been in operation from the day you opened the doors to have a product? And what's your personal scientific background?
Okay. My personal scientific background, I'm not a scientist or an engineer. However, my father was a nuclear engineer. My grandfather was a nuclear physicist, actually, that worked with ORNL. And he actually helped on the ORNL, Oak Ridge National Laboratories. Worked on some of the engineering with and the physics of the Manhattan Project. So, it's kind of in my genes, in my system. I don't have an engineering or scientific degree, but I've been inventing and doing things for many, many years. To answer the question of the how long we've been in business. We've been doing R&D for a little over 5 years in the field of hydrogen specifically. The company's been around for about 3 years, and we've been kind of in top secret mode, and nobody really even knew we existed until about a year ago, a little over a year ago, on purpose.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I know there's other questions. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So there are other technologies out there. For example, you know, there's the you can use the fried the oil from frying foods to power your vehicle, or you can use corn, for example. But you know, it doesn't seem like any of those have really taken off. And you know, there's usually something or the economics or something. Have you had anyone, you know, say is this going to be, you know, the next you know, corn technology or whatnot? How can you differentiate, I guess, or what's the easiest way when somebody comes to you and asks that question for you to kind of say, no, this is different?
Okay, Mr. I wouldn't want to be necessarily associated with corn, but the, you know, the biofuel industry, you know, you've got to grow stuff. You got to wait for it to grow, first of all. So, you know, the big part of that is, you know, is a waiting game. And then, you know, they're still learning, and it is. It's a very good industry, and biofuels are great, and hydrogen can complement the biofuels as well. But the difference here is we can capture it instantly. We don't have to wait around on things to grow to capture the hydrogen and to use it. And to speak to that, I mean, we're working on some things now that you know, in the near future, I think would also be applicable here, not only to the villages, but just in to the fisheries and things like that. We're basically working on some bioreformation project that will basically take bio waste, whether that be compost, food scraps, grass clippings, not a lot of grass clippings here, but you know, even human waste, and convert that to hydrogen. So, you know, I understand that there's, you know, some of those taking you know, leftover fish parts that, you know, have to be hauled off somewhere, have to be done something with. You could take those, you know, fish carcasses and things like that and turn them into hydrogen. And we'll get there. You know, we're probably about a year away from stuff like that. But we're doing it now. We're doing it very efficiently on a good scale. But, you know, as we, you know, as Enova becomes involved with Alaska, I just think that, you know, that there's just going to be more and more to come that is just going to make things better and better.
You have a follow-up?
Oh, I just wanted to make a quick comment. As you talked about your background, and was at Oak Ridge National Labs and the nuclear scientist, you know, and Manhattan and so forth, I looked around the room and I noticed some raised eyebrows. So very interesting to hear that, and I think you know, people just by that, you know, it's the credibility and the confidence that people seem to have. I think it's really impressive. So I just wanted to comment on that. Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you. And we have PhDs and engineers and people that we work with that are on staff and as well as consultants. So this is not all me. And you don't have to worry about relying on just me or if something happens to me or whatever. I mean, this is something that's going to go on for a long time.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hilton, on the Energy Committee, I've realized that every fuel source brings its own critics and naysayers and opponents. This sounds very good, very interesting, fascinating. What is the downside, whether environmental or climatological or chemical, or what's the possible downside of this? Or what do critics say about this? If there are any critics yet, there will be.
Well, I think the downside is not being able to get it out there fast enough. I think that's the downside. As far as environmental, there's no environmental impact. As far as you know, cannibalizing industries, we're not doing that. I mean, it offers the opportunity to partner with other industries. As far as competing with fossil fuels, and they're just not going to be around forever, and it's not always, you know, logistically sound to get them where they need to be. So I feel that, again, we're more of a partner, you know, an earth partner, if you will, than we are a competitor. And, you know, as safety, cost, you know, we just really haven't heard a whole lot of downside. I just think that, you know, we just need to get some of this stuff moving. I really just don't know of a downside, and I've been in front of NASA and everybody else, and I mean I've been hammered, and we just, you know, we feel, and there probably are some, but to answer your question right now, I don't know of any.
Okay. Yeah, short follow-up. And the other thing that gives me pause is, as much as I'm proud of my home state and everything, and you're in Alaska and not in the larger population, larger market area, what brings you to little Alaska to describe this to us?
We were invited up here, and we spent about 2 or 3 weeks of time, you know, to see if we could help, you know, see if there was anything that we could offer, because I don't want to do anything that if we can't help. And, you know, through that course of time, we just feel like it's an almost identical match to some of the stuff we're already working on. And we feel that, again, we're not ramping out things of scale right now. So, you know, why aren't we doing this in Texas, you know, might be part of your question. And the reason is that we are. But it's different. And it's different people there aren't hurting like they are up here.
And don't mischaracterize my question. I'm glad you're here. It's fascinating, and it sounds like it has some real promise. I appreciate you explaining it to us.
Thank you, and we're glad to be here. I mean, Marvin thought there was a good fit, and that's why we're here.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just I had a thought about what an area or a downside might be if there was someone located in the desert and had a shortage of water. It would be more difficult to probably manufacture this product there, but then we could manufacture it here and ship it to them. So that would be fine. But my question actually is, what are the costs of the little blue containers? And I mean, someday in the future, if everything goes well, we could possibly take our empties over to the local Tesoro station and pick up ones that were already filled. So what kind of deposit would we have to put down on those little blue?
Well, yes, and to speak to the downside of that, yes, if you don't have water, it makes it a problem. And, you know, again, you know, to speak to the costs, I mean, you know, we're looking at hundreds of dollars right now per canister, making them in very small quantities. So, I mean, we've got an aluminum canister with some special linings and some special internal parts, and the right now the major cost of the system right now is that pellet, okay, the rare earth element side of it, and you know, the nanoscience behind it. So as that advances, that'll get cheaper. Mm-hmm. As we mine things from Alaska that are already in Alaska's ground, I think that we can drastically reduce the cost of these canisters. And the overall vision is, you know, ultimately for the household to be able to, in small scale, produce hydrogen, store it, and use it, or at least from a distribution hub in that community to produce it and store it and then distribute it to the community and just go down and, you know, swap your bottles and do that, just like you do with propane now. I mean, right. That's the ultimate vision. You're right on there.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, Representative Lynn.
How many employees do you have now, not counting outsourcing, not counting outside consultants?
Six.
Very good.
Ball and figure.
Yeah.
What's the future? I mean, what's the future of the technology that you guys have here? What should we expect to see in a few years as you grow in size and you're able to move past the smaller canisters and Connex type facilities? What should we expect to hear from InnovaLabs?
Well, We're working on different materials for the canisters that will increase their capacity and reduce their weight. I mean, if we want to just pass this one around, just so people Please. Can kind of get an idea of what it, you know, it's got a little heft to it, it's a little weight. So, you know, it's not, you know, like a hairspray can, but it actually has less pressure than a hairspray can.
That's fine.
But we'll be advancing the technologies in capacity. So we look to take that canister right there, which is approximately 1,000 liters, and taking it to 2,000-3,000 liters in the very short term, reducing its weight by half, things like that. We'll be increasing the efficiency of the electrolyzer itself, producing the you know, hydrogen more efficiently, using less power. It doesn't take a whole lot now, but you know, we'll be improving that. We'll have hydrogen production stations in place in various locations, people utilizing them, people coming around to the you know, the fact that, you know, they can have a small scale hydrogen economy right now. That's what you can expect of us. You can expect us to, you know, continue to spend, you know, a large amount of money in research and development to always stay in front of the curve and always offer, you know, the world the best products that we can.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I was going to ask a question, Mr. Adams, if I could, from the financial or investment finance side of this. It seems like this could be a very attractive business, or not business model, but technology to get into. Are there efforts to capitalize this, to get investors, or Representative Tuck has to work and buy stock, and that's kind of the
Well, I mean, we are currently raising money. I mean, we've been self-funded, and like I said, we're a zero debt company. We are raising money, you know, right now. And we'll continue to raise money as it makes sense for the company to capitalize and to expand and grow and so forth. So, you know, we are, and we will continue to do that. You know, we still need funding help, you know, funding from, you know, states and communities and things like that to put these projects and get this technology out there to the people.
Okay. And one more, and if I could.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
In general, we've talked about ways to equalize energy distribution across the state, and one of the models for delivering energy to small rural communities in the river system is through propane. Is propane your competitor, or the same? No, obviously the source material is different. But
sure. The propane is it's very safe as far as transporting it and so forth. If there's ever an accident with propane, it's you know, it's a problem. This is a very heavy gas. It stays low. It's not good. We're not really competing with that. I mean, you know, propane has a you know, years and years of an infrastructure for distribution, for exchange, things like that. I mean, we're just now getting started. I mean, hydrogen as a gas compared to propane as a gas, there's no competition. You know, hydrogen can play nice with propane and natural gas vehicles. It can increase their efficiencies. It can, you know, reduce the environmental impact of those vehicles. I mean, just by injecting hydrogen into a natural gas CNG vehicle, I mean, you can all but eliminate its carbon footprint, and you know, it's just little things like that that we'll be doing, but we don't really see them as a competitor. Okay. We just see ourselves and what we can do, and want to focus on that and getting that out there.
Can I ask you about back to the canisters? What's the lifespan of the canister itself or the pellets that's inside of it?
Good question. These canisters, right now we have thousands of charge and discharge cycles with almost zero loss. So we don't really know how long they're going to last, but it's going to be a long time. You know, as far as they can be stored indefinitely, and again, you know, once you have the capital investment of a canister, I mean, it's going to last a long, long time, you know, potentially 10 years based on some, you know, just some forecast, you know, calculations that we've done. So, you know, a lot longer than a battery or anything else. I mean, it's just to date where we're at is thousands. It'll grow.
Is there potential in the future that we will be able to pull our four-wheeler, our car, or whatever up to a station of sorts and connect it straight in without even having to use the canisters?
Good question. Potentially. Again, these pellets absorb the hydrogen, and they don't just take it immediately. They absorb it, and it takes them a little time. You know, they got to kind of play nice, you know, on a molecular level. So, you know, right now you're typically looking at about an hour 15, 45 minutes, and the little one that we passed around that I need to make sure I get back.
It's back there.
is, you know, you're looking at about 30 minutes. So, you know, it takes a little time to charge them. Okay. But if the volume of hydrogen is there, you can charge 10 of these just as quickly as you can charge one of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, but for a car, you know, I think as we get more advanced with our composite materials inside the canister and so forth, you know, where we could maybe get down to a 15-minute charge cycle or something, you know, I think that, again, those will advance and it will become practical. You know, I see the future where we're, you know, running a car on four of these and not a four-wheeler. You know, we'll get there.
Great. Are there any other questions from committee members? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to have the wide-ranging discussion. Is your research, your work, your R&D is all self-funded? Do you have any government, NSF, DOD, DARPA money?
No, not currently. We're working on some projects that may put forth some of that type of funding, but currently we've just done it all on our own.
Very good. Good idea.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the Alaska Energy Authority, I've heard, has renewable energy grants available.
You don't have enough money.
You might want to apply for one of those. That
to use out in a rural area?
In a rural area.
Yeah.
I think they might go for something like this.
Yeah.
I think we might put in for one of those.
Yeah. We can get you in contact.
I would definitely encourage that.
Did you have something, Representative Foster?
Oh, I was just going to say thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Emerging Technology Fund is what Representative Peterson is referring to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, great. If there aren't any other questions from the committee, I would like to say thank you so much for being here. I think what we've seen here is not only, you know, the future of energy, which is kind of the purpose of this committee, but also future of energy in rural Alaska. Rural Alaska can definitely benefit from this, and this is one of the big conundrums that we have here is how do we effectively make sure that rural Alaska has the opportunities to live the same lifestyle as everyone else and at a rate that's affordable and in a means that's just possible to them. And I think this is incredible possibilities there. So with that being said, Mr. Helton, I sure appreciate you being here. And Mr. Adams, thank you for and please, I'll ask you to, you know, you could say one, but I'd like to thank you for doing the due diligence of finding people out there to help us solve these issues. I mean, we're here and we're trying to do what we can, but it takes people within the community, people that are within the rest of the state that are out there seeking these things out. Please, if you have anything else to say, add.
Thank you, Co-Chairman and Co-Chairman Foster and Co-Chairman. Yes, I'm trying to wonder in my mind is how the state can help us develop this infrastructure, because I think we've got the technology here today. We can have this system operating by the end of September of 2011, production stations operating and running, and you know I know that there's a emerging fund. Program under the Alaska Energy Authority, but is there something, because this is so significant, this is not a wind generation, right, which we've got a lot of them out there, this is very unique in itself, and the technology is here today. It's not like we're a theory now or we're trying to figure out if this has got any credibility. It's the engines are running, the CCs are working. I'm wondering if this might be a good project for the state of Alaska to step up and said, this is a demonstration project for us. You know, I mean, just specifically do it. You know, we want three production stations in Alaska. We want them to be producing hydrogen, and we want them operating by September 30th. Put a mandate on that so we can give the relief to the rural Alaskans out there that are paying $6 and $7 a gallon today. Yeah. We've got the technology. If the windmills are up there or the wind generators are up there running, we know it's not going to cost a lot to keep it going.
Yeah. Thank you. I think Representative Peterson wanted to speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, I believe it's the last week of April at the Denina Center in Anchorage. There's the renewable energy conference that they've, this would be the third annual, I believe. And I think a presentation by your group would they would probably jump at the chance to have you make a presentation there.
Okay.
And so the group, the organization that puts that on is called REAP, I believe, Renewable Energy Project in Alaska or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just let us know.
Yeah. What I'd like to respond to what you said, and I definitely think the AEA has the, they are the means for that, and some of the funds that we have out there and we've allocated and will continue to allocate to the, whether it's the Renewable Energy Fund or some of those.
I did happen to look at the grant application, and it appears to be limited on the capacity or the volume that you can apply for a specific project, unless I misinterpreted it.
Yes, there are limitations on that.
About 750 per project, possibly on a certain level. And then I'm just wondering if that's not going to get us our production stations. That'll get us more, you know, closer. Right. But what I'm trying to do is meet an immediate need, you know, get us up there, get us up there running, you know, get the hydrogen out there so we can distribute it. Because if it wasn't for Polar Air Cargo losing that generator, you guys would be out there watching it work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the technology is here today, and it's cleaner. We, you know, so I'm just saying is, you know, is this not something that the state of Alaska, the legislature can do is say, here's a mandate. Let's just see if we can do a demonstration and go directly through you guys to do it because of the significance of what we got here.
Right. I think what would, because obviously we're not going to commit at this point in time, but what you've done is you've opened the element of discussion.
Okay.
Where we can now go through the walls, and I think being on gavel to gavel and other people being able to see this, I think it'll probably travel fast through the halls.
Okay.
This is the stuff we've been looking for. So, you know, to that point, I think we can start the conversation. We can start the this is, you know, an hour and a half ago, no one in here knew about this. So to make sure that we've also, as I'm sure he says he gets drilled by NASA scientists and those very people, there's a reason they do that, and obviously we'll want to make sure we do the same. But I do believe that we found what is a great potential, and the discussion started. And I thank you for bringing the discussion here.
Very good.
Thank you.
So, all right. With that being said, and nothing else, we do next Tuesday we'll be meeting again here. Well, that'll be March 15th. We'll be hearing Representative Olson. He has two bills, HB 36, which is the Small Business Energy Efficiency Grants, as well as HB 37, which is the Net Energy Metering. And if there is no other business, which I don't believe we have, it is 4:31, and this meeting is adjourned.